Ja, dann fangen wir jetzt einfach mal an, würde ich sagen. Wenn er noch kommt, dann kriegt er schon mit. Muss ich jetzt wieder auf Englisch wechseln? Okay. For the record. Alright, let's start. So now we are going away from model checking for a while. As you probably noticed in the lecture, we're doing formal analysis of imperative programs. So the tool that we are going to use is FrameRC, and I asked you all at the very beginning of this tutorial, well, of these tutorials, to install it already. So I hope everyone has it installed by now. But I haven't told you at the beginning what FrameRC is and what we are going to use it for. So FrameRC is actually not a tool as such, but it's a collection of tools. It's a framework for static analysis of C code. And static analysis includes things like value analysis, which you can also do using FrameRC, which means you have a look at your code and you have some variables in that code. And at each point where this variable is mentioned, you can, well, in FrameRC, for example, click on it and perform a value analysis, and then it tells you which contents this variable could ever have. So it analyzes the code and tells you, well, this integer can have values 0 to 365 or whatever at this point of code. Then another thing is impact analysis, which is also quite interesting. So you mark some line of code, and then you ask the FrameRC what impact has this line of code on other portions of my program. So if I set this variable to true here, at which points in my program will this have an impact? And deductive verification. And we are going to deal with this last bit only in this lecture. So we are going to have a look at functional correctness of programs, which basically just means, is my program doing exactly what I expect it to do? And how do we do this correctness verification? Well, there are two plugins in FrameRC. One is more or less deprecated by now, which is called Jesse. It actually has the nicer interface, but it's a bit more complicated, and you cannot look behind the scenes as easily as with the WP plugin, which we are going to use. So this WP stands for weakest preconditions, and I think you all learned what weakest preconditions are already in algorithms and data structures in the first lecture, if they didn't cut it by now. But you also heard something about assertions and postconditions and preconditions in the lecture on Wednesday. So for any postcondition of a program, we can compute a weakest precondition. And how this is computed, you will probably also learn in the lecture. But for us, it's only important that you can compute it and you can represent it in the language that we are going to see. And this is done automatically by the WP plugin, so you don't need to care about this. You only need to specify your preconditions and postconditions, and the calculations are done by WP, by FrameRC. So how does this work? First, we need to annotate the code. So you have your regular C program, and you add comments to that, which are written in an assertion language called ACSL. I will later, or I will probably upload the manual for this ACSL language, which is not very long, on the web page, or well, I can just point you to the manual there. And it's a quite a simple language, as we will see shortly. And then, as I said, you write post conditions for your programs, and also preconditions and other annotations. I'll show you in a minute what exactly we can do. And then for the post conditions of your program, the precondition is automatically calculated, and an SMT solver is used to find out whether your preconditions that you wrote into the code imply this calculated weakest precondition. And by the Hoare calculus, which you will also see in more detail in the lecture, if this implication is true, then your program is correct. I said SMT, maybe I mentioned it already in some earlier lecture, earlier tutorial, but I want to make this a bit more precise now. So SMT is satisfiability modulo theories. So you all know this satisfiability problem for first order formulas, which is quite a hard problem. And for SMT, you add an additional theory to this satisfiability problem. So that means you have some axioms, like here, the axioms for array axis. And then you can write formulas like this. So B plus 2 is the conjunction of some constant C and a function F called with read and write onto an array. This should be not equal to f of some other thing. So this would be a formula that you can enter into an SMT solver, and it would check if these axioms are true, then is this satisfiable, this formula. So for arrays, actually, if you have quantifiers in your language, then this is an undecidable question. But for unquantified formulas, I think it's in NP even. So it's still a difficult problem, but not undecidable. So there are lots of SMT solvers on the market. The ones that we are going to use mostly are this Z3 by Microsoft, and then CVC4 and AltErgo. AltErgo is the one that comes with FramRC natively. And they all have different strengths, so more than often, a single one of them won't solve all your goals. So you usually invoke FramRC with a series of SMT solvers, and everyone is tried on each and every formula, and some of them can be solved by only one of them. Actually, you've already seen SMT, not directly, but we also encountered it more or less in the model checking part. So the bounded model checking algorithms, they usually work with satisfiability methods. So think about this formula, for example. So you have an initial state and a next step relation and a specification, and then you check this formula: is the initial is S0 the initial state, and can I come from S0 to S1 using the next relation, and so on, and then can I come from Sn minus 1 to Sn using the next relation, and is in each of these, in any of these states, the specification not true or invalidated. So this is a formula that you can give to a satisfiability checker and do model checking in this way, bounded model checking. So yeah, for this we actually don't really need theories, because in USMB, it's actually really plain satisfiability without theories. But you can have a more complicated language, for example, C or C++, where you have arrays and integers and things like that, which you all don't have in USMV. But then it's very much more efficient to translate these things, these formulas into SMT formulas and use an SMT solver. So, for example, this ESBMC model checker is using Z3 and I think one other SMT checker, SMT solver to model check C programs. So maybe we can compare this to NewSMV or to also to the methods we are using in PharmaC later in the tutorials. I'll have a look at this in more detail and see if we can do something with it. But now let's get back to ACSL, which is our specification language. So there are most importantly just plain assertions that you can write. So every ACSL comment starts with this usual C comment followed by an at sign. And then you can write ACSL code. You can assert some proposition. You can require some proposition to be true as a precondition for a function. You can ensure something as a postcondition for a function. And this is also very important. You can write loop invariants. And loop invariants are most of the time what you need to be a bit inventive for. So you the postcondition and precondition are usually straightforward, and then if you have some loop in your program, then you need to think about what is a strong enough invariant which allows this automatic prover to infer from this invariant and my pre and postcondition the weakest precondition actually. Then you can also tell from a C or using ACSL which memory locations are assigned in this part of code or in this function, for example. So as I said, P is some assertion or a proposition like X is greater than zero or A of X is not equal to something, whatever. And L is a memory location. So memory locations, then this brings us to pointers, right? Pointers are actually quite difficult in this setting. So does anyone see what the problem might be here? So think about preconditions. So I have this assertion which says that, well, X should be greater than zero after it was assigned X plus one. So what would be a proper precondition for this statement? I think we also had it in the lecture already on Wednesday. So what must hold before this to make this assertion afterwards true? Yeah, exactly. Or although you can state it like this, so X plus 1 must be bigger than 0. Right? Yeah. But this is the same thing, of course. Yeah, exactly. But how is it here? So I ask of the reference pointer P to be greater than 0 or greater or equal to 0. Can I as easily find a precondition for this?
Not really, because we don't know what P points to before. And it's even not really important because, I mean, at that point it points to X. But we would have to find out that afterwards the pointer then points to X and do a precondition based on that.
Well, what you want to say is probably that we changed this pointer location here by adding one, right? And that means we point to some memory location which we have never seen before. So we would have to ensure that this memory location at x plus one was greater than zero beforehand. But this we cannot infer beforehand because we cannot know that we are going to assign this pointer to the memory location of X. So there is no proper way to do this in this setting, right? So as I said, well, P of X is evaluated to this X greater than zero, and the weakest precondition is X plus one greater than zero. But what is the weakest precondition of this set of programs? Well, it's difficult. Let's say it like this. And this is also why the WP plugin employs memory models for different purposes. So the simplest one is the Hoar model. It's really very simple, and it just does what we tried here. So it doesn't allow us dereferencing pointers, because then you can not use the traditional simple Hoare calculus that you learned on Wednesday in the lecture. It just doesn't work. You cannot cope with pointers in this way. And then there's the typed model, which is the default one, and this one stores heap values in separated global arrays. So this allows you to use pointers to some extent, but you cannot cast heterogeneously. So this is still not you cannot support the whole C language with this, but it's at least a little bit better. So you can use arrays in this type model at least. I will probably tell you next week, or maybe even later, what exactly this type model is doing and how it looks. And you can even implement more models. So there's a type plus model, and there are a few other experimental models which you can try out. And you can even implement your own. So this pharmacy framework is quite easy to expand. You can program your own plugins for it, and you can also program your own memory models and so on. But we are probably mostly using this typed or the type plus model. Ah, okay, so at this point I can already show you maybe some program and its annotation. Okay, well, should turn off the light maybe. Right. So I have this C function which receives an array of integers and two integer values, n and v. And then it runs through this array, and as soon as it finds the value v, it just destroys it, or, well, it sets it to zero. And then in the end, it returns minus one. If it finds the value, then it returns the index of this element, and the rest of the array up to that point is destroyed. It's set to zero. And now we can have a look at what annotations we can add. So it looks like this, and now it's a bit too large. Yeah, this is fine. Okay. So this upper part here is called the function contract. So it contains a precondition, a postcondition, memory assignments, and so on. So the precondition here is given by this require statement, and it says that for this function to work correctly, n must be bigger than zero. So the length of the array must be positive. And additionally, and this is already a quite a useful command, this valid is an ACSL primitive which gets a memory location range. So in this case, you say that from x on, x plus 0 to x plus n minus 1, all the memory locations must be available. So this array must be really initialized, and you must be able to write to these locations. Then the second part is a postcondition. So you can add arbitrarily many postconditions to your program. The first one says that if the result is the result of the program, which is also obtained by this primitive ACSL primitive command / result. So if the result is negative or minus one, or the what is this here? Or result is between n and zero, and the value was found at this result. It must be bracketed actually. So, yeah, right. The brackets are there, so we should indent this in another two steps. So, okay. It ensures that either the result is minus one, or this conjunction here holds, which says that the result is found in the array, and for all other integer k between zero and result, the array location, the array at this location is zero. So this is what I informally said before, that this function destroys everything up to the point where this this value is found. And additionally, we can ensure that if the result is minus one, then of course every location in every array cell must be filled with zeros, right? And this is also very important. So it says which memory locations this function accesses. So if you have read-only access to some parameter in your function, then you should not put this assigns here. It's really necessary that all of these locations, well, not all of these, but is it necessary? So we can try it later, but it can be problematic if you add too many assigns here, because then it gets more difficult for the automatic procedures, because you add more more variables to the system. But yeah, so this is also a range. So you can always use ranges to address memory locations. Okay, and then inside the function, since there is a loop, we also need to somehow specify the loop invariant and more. So for loops, it's also possible to specify assigns, and it's usually also necessary. We can try what happens if we leave out, for example, this I. So of course, this loop uses a counting variable I, which is accessed, well, it which is incremented in every iteration. So it must, of course, be assigned somewhere. And we ripple down this assignment from the function level to the array level here. This is an example that you can give names to any clause, to any proposition. So for example, I say that this assertion 0 less than or equal to I less than or equal to n is called bounded, and then I also can use it in the FromSee interface. So if I call FromSee and tell him, well, what about this bounded? Is it satisfied or not? Then it's easier to address these things, because otherwise they would be named automatically, and then you cannot find out which one is which. But this also already brings us to these loop invariants. And to the point where we need to be a bit creative. So, for example, I've included two different loop invariants here. One that is actually unnecessary and isn't needed to prove this whole thing, and one that is necessary. So in this case, it already suffices to say that, well, the loop invariant is that I is never out of bounds, so to speak. So we always terminate the loop before n is reached, which is clear because this is a for loop, so the semantics of C shouldn't cheat us and give us an I that is larger than n. But I could also give the system something like this. So for all k between I and n. Now I know why I included it, because I can show you what this at command does. So it says that x of k at the point in time before this loop was called is actually x of k. Well, this is trivial. So, no, it's not. So, you look at the memory location given by x of k, with k being evaluated at this very point where this is evaluated. And then you look at this memory location before the loop was executed, or before the iteration. For the last iteration. So in this way, you can add temporal information to your invariants or to your assertions. And there's another necessary invariant here, which says that up to the point where we are, so up to I minus 1, we have already written x of k, written 0 to x of k. And this one here is not necessary every time, but it's not a bad idea to include it. So it just says which variable decreases with every loop iteration. So this is like, if you know cock, then this ensures that this is an inductive fixed point, so you always deconstruct one parameter of the function until it's, in this case, 0. Right, and as I said, you can just include some assertions everywhere in the code, for example, to debug your debug the debugging, so to speak, so. Or just for readability, because then this also appears in the list of proof goals. And okay, so let's just execute this. Oh, I already did here some bigger. Okay, so you call this. Can you read this? Or is it still too small? I guess this is readable. So you call this using FromRC minus WP for weakest precondition plugin. And then just the file that you want to prove. And then it says which goals were proved by which prover. So in this case, QED, and which is a simplification engine built into the framework. And the SMT solver AltErgo could solve these 18 goals together. This is not very informative, and that's why I usually chain this with the report plugin, minus report, which actually gives you some useful output. So for every condition, for every post condition and loop assignment and so on, it outputs whether it could be solved and by which by which method it was solved, I think. No, actually it doesn't tell you which solver generated this goal, but I can show you maybe with additional provers. So you can add this minus WP prover directive, and for example Y3Z3, Y3CVC4, AltErgo. This should suffice. So I added now Z3 and CVC4 to the list of provers that I tried. And then probably one of them will take over one of the goals. So Z3 in this case solved 5 of the goals. But unfortunately, it still doesn't say which ones. Maybe this is because this is a new version, I need to say something like verbose or whatever. Verbose 2. Suddenly 6 goals. Maybe verbose max. No, apparently. I need to find out how this works in the new version. So usually it said which one proved it, but that's certainly can be found out. Okay. So what we didn't check in this example now was runtime errors. So the FromRC kernel usually expects your program to be runtime error free. So if you write to some unknown memory location, it wouldn't complain. But you can automatically generate these ACSL commands, which check for runtime errors. So you can say minus WP RTE, I guess. Then it adds, as I said here, it annotates the function with runtime error checks, and then again tries to prove this automatically. I now need to remember what command this was, but you can actually print the source code after this RTE has been called. Maybe I can quickly find out. WP Where is it? Here. Proof obligations. Nope, it's not it. Maybe it wasn't even in the WP plugin. Okay, I cannot find this command switch now, but it's not too important because usually you don't want to see what this generates. Maybe I can show you next time then.
Can you go back to the code with your ambitions?
Sure.
You discussed that what is necessary and what is not necessary, but what defines what's necessary? Because I mean, we define what we want to prove here. So what should be the point of necessity?
The point of necessity is that, of course, we define in the function contract what we want to prove, right? So we define that if this is true, then afterwards this must be true. But what I mean by necessary here is that if I leave this out, if I don't put this here, then the automatic procedures cannot prove it. So I can just show you. So this one is necessary, as I said. So I can just comment this out and try again if it's solved. So let's not use the. Let's do it like this. So it takes quite a long time to prove this post condition, and in the end it will just fail. Right, so now it says that only six of the goals have been validated and three are not validated. And this is the post condition of in line 5 and line 9. Let's have a look what this is. So line 5 is this. So this post condition cannot be verified. And in line 9, yeah, the other one can as well. So both of the post conditions fail to be verified because I did not guide the program enough using my loop invariants. And actually, that's because I didn't. This thing here, this x of k equals 0, is actually part of both of my post conditions. So it needs to get this information somehow, somewhere. It cannot infer this from the code. It doesn't really look at the semantics of the code. It just translates every sequent, every sequence of commands. It uses the Hoare calculus and produces preconditions backwards. And in case of the loops, it cannot do this because there you need the invariant. And if the invariant isn't strong enough, then it cannot go on. And for example, this one, I said it's unnecessary, so we can check this. If it's still solved, then it should go through. Yes. So this is, in this sense, it's unnecessary because it's information that might be helpful, so it doesn't hurt to include it, but it's the automatic procedures can solve it without. Okay, right. What next? But of course, this is not everything that ACSL can do. The language is actually quite interesting, so you can write your own functions and ghost code in the language, which is quite nice because then you can separate all your computations that you do for the verification business from the actual code. So if you strip this code from these comments with the at sign, then it will just run as if nothing has happened. and these functions that you can define are usually prefixed by this logic keyword, and then you define them like usual C functions, with the exception that the types are different. So this real type, for example, is a real mathematical real number. So instead of using doubles or floats, it uses mathematical values here. and this is also where this SMT comes in, right? So you have suddenly the theory of real numbers included in the system. And additionally, you can state lemmas, so intermediate statements that are probably obviously true, but which also are solved by the SMT solver. So you state some formula, like this mean property here. So if x is smaller than y, then x is also smaller than, then the mean of those two is between x and y. Well, this is a trivial statement, and it can certainly be proved automatically by an SMT solver. And these come in handy sometimes, because then you don't need to put this property in every assertion that you have in a loop or something, but you can give it a name and then just reference it somewhere. And even more complicated, you can write structures which are called axiomatics, like this here. So this is a list of integers, and you assign it a type. So this new type is called int L, and this is treated then like the other types, like this real type, as an inductive type given inside the logic language. And you cannot reference it from the C code. That's, by the way, always true. Also, these logic integer functions and the lemmas, you cannot reference them from the C code, of course. And these axiomatics, they are a bit like in algebraic languages, like in Haskell or so. So you specify constructors like nil here for the empty list, and a cons constructor that takes an integer, which is also again a real mathematical integer, and another integer list, and gives you an integer list. And this, for example, is an additional constructor that appends to lists. And then you can add axioms which have to be true for this type. So, yeah, appending nil to a list is L, and what does this say here? Okay, so these are the two axioms for this append function, append constructor, right? So appending a cons to a list is appending the first element to the appending L1 to L2, to the list that you get by appending L1 to L2. right, so this can come in handy as well. And finally, almost finally, we have ghost code. This is the only place where you can mix the C code with the ACSL code. So you can define ghost variables like this, ghost integer. And here it's important that you cannot, of course, cannot use these mathematical types, but you need to use C types. And then you can use these ghost variables in your assertions, in your annotations, and you can operate on these values as if they were real C variables. So you can, of course, again, not reference the ghost variables in the C code, but you can use C syntax and C commands on these variables in the comments, and they are going to be executed inside the framework. But I think that for the first exercise sheet, at least, we won't need ghost code and also not axiomatics. So just to let you know that this exists. And another useful thing is behaviors. This can come in quite handy already early on. So if, for example, your program has two different behaviors, like the one that we saw here, like this program, which has the behavior that either it returns this -1 result or it does something. And in this case that it returns -1, then something different has to be true. And this can be captured with these behaviors. So you state one precondition, and for each behavior you state what the assumptions for this behavior are and what additional preconditions you might have, and then what the actual postconditions must be in this behavior. So you can translate it into this. So precondition must hold, and from A1, R1 must be implied, and from A2, R2 must be implied. And for the postcondition, it means that, here's another built-in command. This backslash old refers to the initial value before the function was called of A1, implies E1, which is the postcondition again. We must be careful here. So the precondition is the precondition of the complete program is P plus the preconditions of the behaviors with these implications prefixed. And the postcondition is, of course, that from this assumptions, the actual postconditions must hold. It looks a bit more complicated than it is. So if you forget about this right part, the translation, then it's actually relatively intuitive to use this. But this is also, I think, only on the second exercise sheet. So you don't need to care about it right now. Nice. So this is actually what I wanted to see, what I looked for before. So we can try it out now. WP out is the actual command that outputs the proof goals. So let's check. Oh. No input file. Well, that's too bad. What? Why is it? Ah. Like this. Now we have it. So it actually creates a directory which contains for each memory model used the proof obligations. And for example, you can have a look at what, let's say, the postcondition or let's say the assign, the loop assign part. Assign part 2. Not the out file, ergo file, like this, right. So this is how a typical proof goal would look like. It's very complicated, but actually it's not, it's not complicated. So what it does, it is it translates the original loop assign statement into these theories. So now it incorporates this into the memory model, which says that, well, here we have these arrays which contain the pointer addresses that you might manipulate and so on. And then it builds up some huge implication that says, well, if I1 is greater than 0 and I1 is greater than I2 and so on, the addresses pointed to by these I's are really integers, and so on and so on. And in the end, it says that included A1, I1, A1, I1, which I think translates to this memory location pointed to by A1 is included in the set of valid memory locations that you might access. And why this, why it has 4 parameters, I don't know at the moment. Yeah. And there are other statements here, for example, this linked, which says that the memory location pointed to by T is really a linked list or a connected set of memory locations and so on. And this Ergo language is not too readable, but you can actually generate also coq files. So if you have already heard semproc, then this might be interesting to you. So if some goal cannot be solved, then you can also generate a coq file and try to solve it manually. Of course, you can also try to solve these alt ergo proofs manually, but it's much easier to load it up in coq. Right, that's also what's on my slide here. Yeah. And it's really the case that sometimes you cannot prove things automatically, or at least it seems like you cannot prove them automatically. And in this case, it's often necessary to fire up another proof proof system to help you with the goals. Yeah, so that's everything for today, I think. Any questions so far? No questions? Oh, then thanks for the attention.